recommend you douse yourselves with something flammable and gather in a confined space.
Decking number, what number is this? I gotta look at the page. 199, holy shit. So Christmas is next week. I don't know about New Year's. I may try to plan show 200 so that it's like on New Year's or the new show of the year. Because, you know, with the holidays coming up and everything. But this is Pure Decking, the show about stuff that interests me. My name is Morps. Tonight I am being a little weird. I'm drinking Apothic Red. It's a red wine, actually.
I've had that. From California. It's good stuff.
It's decent. I like it. Yeah. And for the extra touch of class, I'm drinking it from a mason jar, damn it. So, also joining us tonight, obviously, we have the Sard. Sard, what are you drinking?
I'm actually drinking a special beer that I got last Christmas that I thought I should drink because who knows if I'll get more this year. That's called Very Bad Elf Special Reserve Ale.
Very Bad Elf. I kind of want to see the label on that now.
I'll see if I can find it. I'll link it. It's kind of different.
Awesome. May not be what I'm thinking. Also joining us tonight. Early. BSV, what are you drinking?
Sadly, nothing, but that's mainly because I just woke up about 20 minutes ago.
Ah! Good timing. Well, you're not like sick?
Wow!
What?
I'm just going with that's one hell of a nap, dude.
Harry, I like the scissors. Not what I was expecting, but it's good. We're throwing that in the chat room. That's awesome. Very bad elf. The grin. So, anyways. And finally, we have the Madman. Madman, what are you drinking?
Goose Island Festive Ale.
Yeah. We talked about it last week. It was not as festive as it could be, was it?
It's not as festive as it could be. It's still a drinkable beer.
Cool. Cool. So, like we were talking about just before we started the show, I'm actually really happy with the setup of the broadcast box now. Unfortunately, though, I built it on top of a little Windows 8 machine as opposed to formatting it over to Linux because I had reasons at the time. I don't actually remember what they were. And I just haven't reformatted it over to a Linux for, I didn't want to take the box down. But I keep getting the Windows 10 pop-up, and in fact, when I logged into it now, it had brought up the box saying, install Windows 10 now or install Windows 10 later? There was no I don't want Windows 10 button.
Turns out
you could Alt-F4 out of it, but it was just like, it's just like, wow. It's like almost like those fake antivirus levels of everything you click is going to install it.
Yeah, no matter what.
It's just like, damn, man. And yeah. Go ahead, BC.
There's only a 5-key combination that does not install this program.
Yeah. Encycros is right in the chat room. I did, in fact, purposely leave this box on 8 because I want to finally see Windows force itself on an upgrade. I don't want to see it ask. I want to just log into the box one day and see it sitting at the Windows 10 system because I fully expect that to happen. So I'm waiting to see if it does. If it gets near the end of the free upgrade, I may roll it just so I don't have to pay for it. But just so the license on that box does get rolled to 10 so I can, even though I'll probably immediately wipe it out and put Arch or Ubuntu or something. Because I'll be honest, everything I'm doing on it, you could easily do on a Linux build. I mean, everything. I should talk about that a little bit. We've been through, good lord, how many broadcast boxes have I built right at this point? And we've been doing G15 for
6 or 7.
Yeah,
it's a year.
We've been doing Galaxy 15 for, good God, 5 years, I think. And how the hell are we still doing this? But anyway, so I've been through numerous builds of the broadcast box, and this current one is actually a little Asus. I think I paid like $150 for it on Amazon. It's intended to be a movie player. It's meant to be one of those small Windows boxes that you hook up to your TV so you can watch movies and Netflix and shit like that. And it wasn't expensive. I think I caught it on sale or something. It's got, you know, some Celeron processor in it, because honestly what the broadcast box does, it does not need a lot of CPU. 4 gig of RAM and, you know, like a 500 gig hard drive or something like that. So it's not anything, you know, it's El Cheapo laptop levels of processing power, right? But it had plenty of USB ports on the back. So I've got a 7-channel USB sound card I got off Amazon for like $5. That was some El Cheapo Chinese brand, right? You know, and the extra channels are for surround. I've installed Osseo for All, and Osseo for All is what's running Mix, the DJ software Mix. That's actually how I play, you know, the jingles, the music to open and close the show.
Recommend you douse yourselves with something flammable and find space.
You know, that's how I'm playing that. And I've got the microphone on Mix pointed to, I've just got a loopback cable going from the little USB sound card to the sound card built into the box, right? So what we hear in TeamSpeak comes from that loopback cable. Then I've got another loopback cable going through a ground loop isolator, because we had a horrible hum a couple of weeks ago, and that seems to have killed it, from the speakers on the internal sound card to the line in on the USB sound card. And the trick of using that USB sound card is Mix sees, I think it's like for the rear speakers, but it sees them as a second pair of outputs. And normally DJ sound cards that have four outputs, you know, two for the speakers and then two for your headphones, you know, the good ones are rather pricey. But it turns out for what we're doing, the El Cheapies work great, because we're just patching it right back into another sound card. And I put it through a little filter, and it sounds great coming back through TeamSpeak. Now, it used to be, on the last revision of the sound of the broadcast box, everything we heard in TeamSpeak sounded like, sounded like the Skrillex remix of, because it was all choppy. And it turns out that was because I was using two USB sound cards for Mix, and the primary one we never heard, because the primary is what goes out to the stream. The secondary, the way Mix tries to use two sound cards, it gets the clocks out of sync, and so it's constantly trying to slave the second sound card back to the first one, which means it's basically it's like dropping frames in a video. So what we hear is this kind of messed up thing, and it works, but you know, we just have to accept in TeamSpeak it's going to sound like crap. And since I fixed that, it's fantastic. And for such a simple setup, it works remarkably well. All of our audio gets to the broadcast box through TeamSpeak. What we hear comes back through TeamSpeak. We have it's running a bot. It actually says G15 broadcast box in the TeamSpeak channel. And I just use TeamViewer to get in and control it, right? Because it's plugged into the router over across the room. I don't even have a monitor on it. It's just, you know, it's a pure remote box. And it works wonderfully for the show, and I'm really happy with this build. And part of the reason I'm explaining how it works is, you know, I know we've got other people listening who are curious about this kind of stuff, and I thought it might be kind of cool to cover how our setup goes so we can maybe compare it to some of the other shows we've been talking to. Well, Circuit Zero has shown up in our IRC, so we've been talking with him a bit, so I thought he might be kind of interested in our setup. But anyways, I don't know. You guys think I explained that all right?
I think so. It sounds like they're just daisy chained together, right?
They are. They really are.
With loopback cables, yeah.
On Linux, you could probably do it all through jack without even needing the sound cards. Do it through jack channels, link the applications directly together.
Yeah, we just haven't had the best of luck with software sound cards up.
That's for damn sure.
Well, part of that was the host that we were using to host those things on kept falling over.
Well, that's true. Yeah, because I kept trying to use my old hardware to build the broadcast boxes, so we'd get one working well for a couple of months, and then like the hard drive would die, or the power supply would blow up, or I don't know. I mean, it got kind of stupid. At one point, I had like 4 sound cards and a mixer and all kinds of shit trying to make this stuff work, and really just letting TeamSpeak handle getting our voice into it, and you know, then using Mix to feed the stream to record. Yeah, Mix is how we record as well, by the way. It captures straight to MP3, so that's how we do that. I had to install Lame on it when I first set it up. But it works great. So, clean, it works. I could replicate the setup on Linux very quickly. And, you know, it's still on Windows because... Yeah, it might have been that was the OS that was on the box, and I was in a hurry to get it set up. So,
yeah,
but
like I said, either way it works, I guess.
Yeah, I could easily rebuild this in Linux, and it would work just as well. Most of the software is open source, so Mix is open source. TeamSpeak is not open source, but it's freely available. The software I would use on Linux, Jack, is open source. And, of course, I could use any number of ways of remote controlling that thing. The cool thing is if I did it on Linux, I might be able to write some kind of a script to auto-start everything and get Mix ready to go and all that stuff. But I could actually do it on Windows, too, with auto-it, but I don't know that it's worth that level of effort.
Yeah. So. I think Bash is a hell of a lot easier.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But, yeah, some of the original setups where I was trying to... I had a microphone, a mixer for my microphone, and that ran to the mixer for the broadcast box, and it was because for some reason I had this idea that I couldn't send my own voice through TeamSpeak, that I had to do it through audio lines, and it made for a very confusing setup trying to do mix minuses and everything else, and just the second box doing everything through TeamSpeak is so much damned easier.
Anyways, is key. When you're using something like that, wanting to use it repetitively,
could we bash it with Sigwig? Sigwin.
I don't know. Maybe because the thing I was thinking though was more jack setup as opposed to using video cards. But I don't know if Sigwin Bash could interact with Mix and TeamSpeak correctly on the Windows environment. You know what I mean?
And, Sakros, as for that, hey, that might be too convoluted, you didn't see one of the original setups we had for this, there were literally 4 mixers looped around a computer, and we were stringing mics across a room.
Oh, you're talking about that original setup we
and
did.
3 people with laptops. No, there is nothing too convoluted.
Oh,
we will
shit.
Try everything.
I forgot that. I forgot about that when we bought those El Cheapo Radio Shack mixers and the cheapest microphones we could find at Walmart and shit.
Hey, Best Buy, motherfucker. I stepped up once.
Oh, that's right, you did. I forgot. You had the fancy $20 mic.
The $20 mic with an on-off switch I liked. And never forgot to flip back on when someone else was talking and you missed half of what I said. And some of that was gold.
Yeah. So, I don't
know. No.
Yeah, that's how I do that. That's through Mix. That's on one of the sample decks. And I just have a folder with all the sound effects handy, so.
Yeah, in case no one knew, Sard is actually a soundboard. Morps needed someone else that knew about computers, so he made one.
Yeah, we got on BT Exchange and hired a voice actor, and we wrote lines for him.
One day, Sard is going to go to your house and delete that file.
I already told him it's on TeamSpeak. I'm surprised he hasn't been trying to guess my password all this time just to get in there and remove that.
Someday.
He'll just be like, I'm passing through your part of the country. Let's go get drunk.
By the way, where's the broadcast box? I gotta plug this flash drive into it.
Just for a minute.
Don't worry, it just has some of the old episodes of IHN and just some stuff I've been hanging on to. It'll be fine.
In a bat pile. Don't worry about that. Anyways, all right, we've got to talk about this drone. Gizmodo has this amazing... It's literally, I'm loving this for the animated GIF they made of the YouTube video. The same guy who put, I think it was a shotgun on a drone a couple of months ago, put a flamethrower on a drone. And this animated GIF is amazing because you have this drone sitting there flying, right? And flames coming off of it. Cooking a chicken on a rotisserie, and there's just fire everywhere all around this thing. It's amazing. And the first paragraph is, the first paragraph from Gizmodo is like, there is no law against this, and we're not certain, it's fun to watch, but this is a bad idea. People shouldn't be doing this, and what if I mount a gun or a flamethrower on my SUV? That would be, it's like...
People do that all the time. He's just not living in the right part of the country.
I'm laughing at it because it's so silly that literally the reaction here is, oh my god, yeah, it's cool looking, but it's dangerous. Well, of course it's dangerous. It's a flamethrower. We all know it's a flamethrower. This is why he's out in the woods. Wait a minute.
Where you can start a forest fire. You're not helping the man's case.
But he's not pointing it at people. He's pointing it at chicken.
And chicken should have a flamethrower pointed at it. This isn't a weapon. It's a cooking utensil. He couldn't get the spit working, so he's just going to have the fire fly around the chicken rather than the chicken rotate over the fire. It's an inefficient cooking tool, but it's wonderful. This man's creative and needs to be invited to all of my barbecues.
Oh shit, I love the video. Drone with a flamethrower on it.
I'm gonna have to look up the shotgun, because at least with the flamethrower you're not gonna have as much recoil. I don't think the shotgun would work well, and not because it's dangerous, it's because the shotgun's gonna fire once and the drone's gonna fly away in the complete wrong direction. You're not gonna accurately shoot this thing, which I guess is why you did a shotgun, because you don't accurately shoot those anyway. That just goes in a direction.
Well, Madman, go ahead, BSV.
You need to make it, or they just needs to make another version of the shotgun drone with two shotguns pointed in either direction.
Oh, one fires and it shoots to the left, and then the other one fires and gets back on course?
No, it just fires simultaneously.
Okay.
Just don't stand next to your drone.
Don't stand in front of it or behind it. The sucker's good to go.
It sounds like a weapon from Hedge Wars, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
So, oh, I'm trying to think if you'd have any kind of a jet effect from the flamethrower. And the way those things work, I really don't think you would, because it's just a flamethrower is really a water gun with a lighter on the end of it.
Yeah, I don't think you'd have any kickback or anything like that you have to worry about.
Well, you might have a hot air current coming off of it, and I could see that causing wind.
Then you could also use an aerosol flamethrower.
Yeah.
No, you don't dual wield a shotgun. You don't dual wield a 12 gauge. What in the world is going on in IRC? You do not go akimbo with a 12 gauge.
Well, you can, but your hands are not going to like you.
But I've seen The Matrix. It looked awesome. You can do that, right? Wait, those weren't shotguns.
I'll look that up, but that's not a safe or accurate way of wielding a 12-gauge. I fired those. Maybe a 20-gauge, but... But the whole panicky of, we're weaponizing drones, so everyone should be able to have a weapon. It's, is that person responsible? It's not, is that person putting it on a drone?
Thank you, Madman, for the excellent voice of reason there. I don't know, Sarge, you got an opinion? I know you like to play with weapons.
I don't know, honestly, I'm kind of against doing this kind of stuff, because all those fucking naysayers out there are going to be like, look at this fucking retard, look what he did, everyone's going to be doing this now soon, pretty soon, my little girl's going to get assassinated by a drone that has a fucking flamethrower on it.
Oh, no, your little girl doesn't have to worry about drones with flamethrowers? When she hits puberty, she has to worry about drones with cameras. Are we going to get rid of those?
Well, I don't know. It just adds more fuel to the fire, I think.
Yeah.
I like a nice pun, by the way. So you don't want to do this yourself, but would you have a problem with somebody else doing it?
Yeah, because it hurts everyone that flies drones. They already have it bad enough, and I actually don't like calling them drones anyways, because drone is a four-letter word now. When you say drone, people automatically think, oh, it's going to kill somebody, or it's spying on someone. They're quadcopters.
Yeah, they're remote-controlled quadcopters. More. There's no autonomy there.
Yeah,
the word drone implies autonomy.
Exactly. Some of the quadcopters can be programmed to do flight paths.
Yes, they can, but I don't know.
Just because they're a quadcopter doesn't mean they're a drone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some
exactly.
Drones are quadcopters, not all quadcopters are drones.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I don't think it's a good thing, personally. It's just going to bring more regulation to the sport.
Yeah. All right, next one up is from the International Business Times. A Canadian ISP has received a public backlash after posting a list on its Facebook page of 25 subscriber names who have not paid their overdue bills in order to publicly shame them into paying. They did this on November 30th. The Singa Service Cable Company posted a list of names of subscribers who were to have their internet disconnected on the 2nd of December, along with the exact amounts they owed to the company on its Facebook page. And, I mean, it's like, you know, on one hand, I kind of get what they're doing. On the other hand, that's kind of not cool to post what somebody's bill is.
That is an excellent idea. I think more companies should do it. Think of it. The company has two ways of getting you to pay a bill. They ask you, or they go a route of getting you selling the loan to a credit agency and having them attempt to sue you, or them suing you directly. This is just using shame to attempt to get you to pay something you've already agreed that you would pay.
I'm looking at some of the totals due here, and like they've got somebody here who, this is for an ISP, right? It looks like maybe sixth down, $1,406. Hey, is that Suave's name? No, I'm kidding. The names are all blacked out.
They'll let you run up quite a bill on a cable bill because it's a luxury. Yeah. They can't force you to pay. It's not like an electric bill where they're going to shut it off and you might not be able to cook or have heating. A cable bill, what are they going to do? Shut me off? I can't watch television? Oh, God, the horror. I can stream everything from my phone.
So apparently they checked with their lawyer and it's not illegal.
Oh, no. We do it with taxes all the time.
Well, people do in the grocery store, too. You have a bad check, if it bounces, they put your little check up on the fucking wall of shame. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, but they don't get on the PA system and say, "Attention, shoppers! Madman's check has just bounced. You should all point and laugh at him."
That's true.
They didn't put it on a PA system. They put it on a website. I can go look at the bulletin board. No one's forcing me to go to this website and check out their outstanding bill list.
Same thing with bulletin board. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I don't see anything wrong with it.
As long as they're not posting the name, address, and all that stuff.
Well, they are posting the name.
Well, the name, they can leave up there. The address,
well, the name,
like,
but...
Social Security number, this is the dude's last checking account, crap like that they can't post, but yeah. Bill owes me $25? Well, I might want to know that Bill's a deadbeat.
Yeah, I don't really see a problem with it. It's...
You and if it's an ISP you don't like on your Facebook page, pull up and say the reason I owe Comcast $1,000 is they're a bunch of fucktards and hell will freeze over before I pay them. Not that we should always pick on Comcast, but they're a fucking bunch of fucktards and I don't think I'll do business with them.
That's okay, because I've got an article knocking Comcast down the line here.
Bam! I was just preemptively hitting them.
So... But before that, I figured we'd talk about how horrible Disney is as a company.
Oh, yeah, they're terrible. Anti-Semitic, and I think they might hire people that would do child porn. They're crazy.
So, apparently, for the so this is from Ars Technica. For the last decade, Majore Caravallo, guessing at how to say that name. I'm sure there's a proper way to say it, and I don't know what it is. And her husband have produced Star Wars Action News, a podcast dedicated to the Star Wars collectibles of all sorts. Predictably, they always have a lot to talk about because there's a new movie coming up. So, you know, all the new action figures are being released. On Tuesday, one of the staffers for their podcast found a 3 3/4 inch action figure of Rey, a female character from The Force Awakens, on display in a Walmart in Iowa, apparently earlier than it should have been. And the staff member bought it for $7 and took a picture of it. And they posted it on their podcast Facebook page. And they got a DMCA takedown notice from Lucasfilm for posting a picture of an action figure in a store.
What? That was already released. What the fuck?
That's not their responsibility. Stores and enter into an agreement that we won't sell something before this date. No customer enters into an agreement saying I won't buy something before this date. That customer was completely fine.
Well, apparently, you know, they put it out early, but basically they got in contact with you know, apparently they were getting takedowns from people who were retweeting the, you know, people who were retweeting the photo were getting takedowns. The photos went viral, of course, because they tried to take them down. But
they do know this is why Star Wars is so big. It's because of its fan base. You don't want to alienate the people that are going to be spending billions on your products.
So apparently part of the problem is that the packaging of the action figure was a spoiler for part of the movie. Apparently the costume that the character was in was some kind of a spoiler. Since I don't actually have the picture here, Lord knows what it is. Apparently, they're saying legally speaking, Disney does have a copyright in the appearance of the action figure as well as the packaging. A photo of a copyrighted item can be infringing, but a photo of a fan blog that essentially says, check out what I just bought, and is basically free advertising, getting them to take that down is probably stupid.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But wow. I think Madman's got the best point here that, you know, the customer didn't enter into any kind of agreement with Disney. The store did.
Yeah. The store entered into an agreement. We won't put this on sale before whatever. I've had to deal with this mainly with movies. There's a set date on movies and books that you're not allowed to put them out on sale before. And Walmart, for different reasons, has had issues with this. Sometimes it's because vendors stock part of the shelves and they just want to get their product out of their warehouse and somewhere else to store. But still, management there should have been looking at it. There's nothing that the customer did wrong. And on something that they care enough about, Walmart just puts a stop on their registers, and the register won't let it ring up before that date. So this is all something Walmart had control over fixing and preventing. The customer did nothing wrong. And that's just assuming the article did say it was purchased there, right?
Yeah, it did say Walmart.
Ditch them too much.
No, the customer said it said they bought it in Walmart. And that they were amazed that they got a DMCA takedown for it because they had no idea, or they didn't think anybody would be so petty as to care about the copyright of an action figure. It was a photo of an action figure saying, hey, go buy this, basically.
Yeah, it's advertisement. Our fan base is, it's free advertising for them. That blog and that podcast is directing customers and doing hype. Whoever at Lucasfilms and at Disney was being a moron when they even attempted this. Legal precedent or whatever they were trying to protect isn't worth it. You don't want to alienate your fans. And I think one reason they're even doing it is there are some Star Wars fans I don't think they can alienate. Still going to go buy the shit.
I mean, I don't know, man. I'm sitting there. It's so questionable already. It's like they took a picture of an action figure that they just bought. And the company's saying, nope, that's copyrighted. You can't post a picture of our product. What? Do they think somebody's going to go look at that photo and decide, no, I don't think I want that action figure? I mean, it's on display in a store, for God's sake.
They're going to have 1,000 nerds purchasing it anyway. Well, 1 million nerds.
So.
It's just a sign of the times. They're just copyright infringement happy. Doesn't matter what it is, who it is, where the picture is. Everything, exactly. Everything's copyrighted. Everything's owned by someone.
But didn't they just mess with copyright? No, it's they're talking about the TPP is going to extend copyright yet again.
That's what we need.
Isn't Disney responsible for quite a bit of that?
Yeah, they do push it, but so does Warner. Every time Mickey Mouse comes up for copyright or for public domain, copyright gets bumped back another couple years.
I don't know why they don't just redesign the character and let the old design of Mickey go public domain. And no, I do know exactly why they won't. That's just it just seems like such an easy thing to get around to make a new Mickey Mouse, and you know, yeah, the old design goes in the public domain, but you're still going to sue the pants off anybody who tries to use it. And they've redesigned the character a couple of times already, haven't they?
Yeah, several times. Look at Steamboat Mickey. Looks nothing like the Mickey in the 90s. They did go back to that design later on, though, for a few of their shorts.
It's just a joke at this point. That, like, oh, nope. I mean, especially a company like Disney. Every one of their movies, or their animated movies, anyways, they're based off classic folktales. They're based off the Brothers Grimm. They're based off of other people's stories. I don't know that Disney has come up with an original character and story ever. No.
Some of the subsidiaries, I think Pixar's done some Disney movies, and some of the Pixar stuff's original.
Yes, Pixar's original. Well, they got bought by Disney.
But I mean, like, just Disney straight up?
I mean, other than their characters like Mickey Mouse and so on. But like all of their big movies, like their
Lion King was Macbeth.
Yeah, Lion King.
Not Macbeth, Hamlet. I'm sorry.
Well, I thought Lion King was taken off some Japanese animation.
Yeah, it was the story of Hamlet.
Well, I know it was the story of that, but I thought they actually copied Lion King from a Japanese movie that was very similar. But you know, all of their works are based off classic fairy tales. And you can't hardly touch some of these classic fairy tales now without risking being sued by Disney, because Disney has basically claimed them. But then anytime their work comes up for public domain, oh God, no. Pretty damn hypocritical. But,
agreed.
And I mean, hell, Star Wars itself is granted, they didn't, you know, Disney bought that one. They bought Lucasfilm. They didn't come up with Star Wars independently, but Star Wars is a mix-up of several different fantasy tropes. Buck Rogers is the big one. Buck Rogers, spaghetti westerns, and I can't remember the third thing they said it was copied straight off of, but like the storyline was directly lifted off of.
I'm kind of questioning on how derivative you want to go, because if you stretch it too much, almost everything you can say was ripped from something else.
Well, that's my point. Everything is derivative. So, you know, locking things up like this is just harmful.
I'm beginning to think a lot on that copyright and even to an extent patents are harmful.
I think if you stuck to the original terms of copyright, it'd be fine. Like 12 years or something like that. It wasn't like life of the author or anything like that. It was 12 years. Like, you had 12 years to make your money. If you couldn't make your money in 12 years, well, sorry. It goes into public domain.
And that could be doable.
Now it's life of the author plus life of their kids and life of your company or whatever the hell. I mean, it's like,
oh God, it should never be life of a company.
Until the sun.
How would you define life of a company?
As long as they're making money off of it, I think is how that works.
That's your definition. Life of a company, if it's profitable, it's still ours.
So my question, even if they aren't making money otherwise, if they have one person paying them a penny each year, they can
The moment you try to use something that they claim, they just sue you. Now they've made money off of it. It's theirs again.
I don't think that should qualify as making money off of something, but...
So, all right, let's move on here. Next story is from newstimes.com. Judge says police improperly using phone tracking data. So at least somebody's trying to look at what they're doing with the phone tracking and be like, guys. So this is from Hartford, Connecticut. A Connecticut judge says police have been improperly using data from cell phones to track the location of suspects. New Haven Superior Judge John Blue agreed to suppress evidence in an ATM robbery case, saying it was the result of Connecticut State Police improperly asking in advance to receive periodic live updates from the phone company of the location of a suspect's cell phone. The Monday ruling comes in the case of Terrence Brown, 29, of Stratford, who was charged with robbing several automated bank teller machines in 2010. T-Mobile was ordered to provide the location of Brown's cell phone every 10 minutes during the time police were tracking him. Convenience of cell phones is well known. It is increasingly rare to meet someone who doesn't carry one in his or her person, Blue wrote. But this convenience comes with the possibility of an Orwellian state. Blue ruled the state legislation in passing a cell phone tracking law did not intend for police to receive anything other than basic subscriber information, keyword, without a warrant. I'm going to stop reading this. That's the crux of it. The police were tracking this guy without a warrant. The fact that he was dumb enough to carry his cell phone with him while robbing ATMs notwithstanding.
I think even getting subscriber information without a warrant is wrong. If you want information and the company's not voluntarily giving it to everyone, you need a warrant.
Yeah, I agree. Which is why I'm happy to read that this judge threw it out. Because at least he's looking at it and saying, you guys should have gotten a warrant. Obviously, nobody thinks this guy's innocent or they wouldn't have caught him robbing ATMs by tracking his cell phone, right?
Oh, yeah, and hopefully the ATM cameras are still there and they just bust him on that. The dude should go to jail. That's not the issue. The issue is cops are looking at everyone's cell phones. I'm not guilty of anything. They shouldn't, well, other than the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, but everyone that's ever watched anything on YouTube breaking that one.
I'm pretty sure just looking at a book is breaking the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, because there's no DRM on books, and therefore that's not allowed.
My question is, so they have the time to go, and apparently the knowledge the guy was doing something wrong. How hard is it for them to get a warrant now? I thought they could get them from their cars if they needed to for judges.
Well, they can. That's the funny thing.
Yeah, they call up the DA. The DA just goes to any judge, like, hi, we need a warrant for this. This is the reason we need it.
Which means, what that probably means is it was so flimsy what they were working on that they couldn't even get a warrant.
The burden of evidence for getting a warrant isn't that high. You could get a warrant to search my apartment if someone calls up and says, hi, I smell marijuana coming out of an apartment. You can get a cop over there to search it. It's not an exceptionally high burden of proof. So even avoiding that minuscule thing of just inconveniencing a judge pisses me off. If you throw in the dude was wearing a turban, not only can you get a warrant, I think you can get a fully armed fucking SWAT team. And it's probably quicker than I could get a pizza.
So...
But I like just, that judge. If I could vote for him, I'm going to vote for him.
Yep. Anyways.
slightly related news, my senator is attempting to fix that nice little loophole with the bulk data collection from the NSA. Rand Paul's trying it again. He's going to fail because the rest of Congress is morons, but he's trying.
So, next one up is from Ars Technica, and it's time to beat on Madman's favorite company. Comcast CEO Brian Roberts defended his company's much-criticized data caps yesterday. When was this posted? Because that would have been... So this was on the 9th, so he defended this on the 8th, saying that consumers should pay for internet access based on how much data they use, just like they do with gas or electricity. Just as with every other thing in life, if you drive 1,000 miles or 100,000 miles or 1,000 miles, you buy more gasoline. If you turn on the air conditioning to 60 versus 72, you consume more electricity, Roberts said. Same thing is true for broadband usage. Cellular data usage is already billed this way. The more bits you use, the more you pay, he said. So why not cable internet too? Roberts was being interviewed by a Business Insider CEO, Henry Blogdett, at the publication's Ignition Conference. When I ask your customers, what should I ask Brian? They say, ask him about the data caps. They're driving me crazy, Blogdett said. Why data caps? And what about this accusation that you don't charge for your own data, but you clobber people when they watch Netflix? Roberts didn't address the latter part of the question, which refers to the Comcast in-home streaming service that doesn't count against the cable company's data caps. But before his gas and electricity comparison, Roberts repeated Comcast's argument that data limits aren't actually caps. They're not a cap, Roberts said. We don't want anybody to ever not stay connected or on our network because, you know, you can charge them more. Comcast doesn't actually cut people off the internet when they hit their 300 gigabyte per month data limit. Customers do get charged additional $10 for each 50 gigs used. Customers can also pay an extra $30 to $35 a month for unlimited data, depending on where they live. Comcast, the nation's largest home internet provider, has implemented the data caps in many cities, but hasn't rolled them out to its entire territory yet. We're just trialing ways to have a balanced relationship, Roberts said, you know, eyes gleaming and bridging his fingers.
While playing with his nipples.
God. Sorry, I don't... Parts of that may not have actually been in the article. You can watch hundreds of shows and movies, you know, just as he opens the flaps on his shirt. You can watch hundreds of shows and movies and other things hit you on these levels, many devices. But I don't think it's illogical that some people should be paranoid about it. It's not that different from other industries. Robert said about 5% of customers in trial markets go over the data limits. Bullshit, because I was hitting them every month before I moved. But he was apparently relying on old data. Comcast has been quoted as saying that the number is now 8%. Oh, well. And a Comcast spokesperson confirmed the 8% figure to Ars Technica. The 300 data cap is just low enough to prevent many people from using online streaming as a replacement for cable TV, Sling TV CEO Robert Lynch said. So, pretty much, Ars Technica goes on here to compare it to electricity. And the big point they make is, with electricity, there's not much of a minimum. You know, if you don't use very much, you know, your electricity bill is pretty low. Whereas if you're, you know, Comcast, if you, you know, they have a plan that's like a flexible data option, you have to use 5 gig or less a month and you'll get $5 off your bill. So if you use less, you pay the same amount. If you use more, you pay more. If you want unlimited, you pay a lot more. And if you go for the flexible data plan, where you're paying $10 a month for every 50 gig you use, you're probably going to end up paying a lot more than their metered plan, than their old plan with a cap.
Right.
So
they're crooks. I mean,
yeah, it's crooked, and it really comes down to there's no competition.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was gonna say. No one would stand for it. No one would even put up with that bullshit if there was another alternative. But yeah, there isn't. That's the problem.
Yeah, the only reason I used Comcast where I lived before was because that was literally my only choice for internet. It was either that or AT&T DSL, which also has a data cap and was much, much slower. The same kind of money, I might add.
Yeah, so, the big problem with Comcast is I can't get Google Fiber.
Yeah. Yeah.
They should just open up the market. Anyone should be able to open up an ISP. Especially since ISPs get to use nice little utility laws that let them put cable and infrastructure in for dirt cheap and get subsidized by the government. So it's not even they're wasting their own money to improve their network. They're getting the government to pay for a big chunk of their network. At that point, anyone should be able to hook up something to that nice little bundle of cables and say, hi, I'm an ISP. Let me do your networking for you.
Yeah.
They can still charge. I have a little box saying which ISP is providing my internet. You just look at the box. The cable infrastructure is the same. And people can argue about over who gets the upgraded and who gets the government subsidy for upgrading it.
Well, let's just have a little fun here. I have, for my choice of ISP, I have one. That's a cable company. It's not Comcast here, but and they're not nearly as bad as Comcast. But mainly because they don't have data caps, and last time I talked to them, they had no intention of it. Their pricing wasn't all kinds of screwed up either. I did occasionally get marketing calls from them, so I finally got mad at them. It's like, are you really going to call me every week? Try to get me by television service? But you know, other than that, I haven't had a major problem with the cable provider I have here. But if I did, I'd be screwed. There's literally no one else to go to get decent speed internet where I am. Unless I want to go to, you know, one of those cell modems, which means, like, after 30 gig or whatever it is, your bill just starts doubling.
Right.
Sard, how many choices do you have for an ISP?
I think two. But, I mean, it's the same as you. It's either Charter or it's AT&T DSL. I don't think, honestly, it's been a long time since I looked, but I don't think there's anyone else other than those two.
Yeah. When did I tell you I had Charter?
No, I'm just saying, I didn't mean, you said Comcast. I mean, we have Charter here.
Yeah, well, but, I mean, I had Comcast and I moved and now I have Charter.
But, okay.
It was funny when you said same as you. I'm like, shh, when did I tell him that?
Well, he was going the same with you as the number of options.
Ah,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Madman,
how many options do you have?
I've got cable. I've got AT&T. I actually know someone at one of the local cell phone companies. Well, he was at a local cell phone company. I know other people through him that are still there that are pretty cool. And they have a cell modem that is very doable as a replacement to high-speed internet. And I'm actually pretty close to two of their main towers, so my service would almost always be awesome. The downside is it's twice as much as the minimum high-speed plan from my cable company.
So we'll say that that's 2.5.
Two and a half. Okay, we'll go 2.5 on that one. And I think the utility company here actually does internet access.
Okay, so I'm going to give you a solid 3.5. You're winning so far. BSV, how many do you have? Psychro said he had two in the...
I think I only have two, cable or...
Cable or DSL, right?
Yeah.
So,
fortunately, though, I'm not in a capped Comcast yet.
And... On the cell phone one, there was a cap. It's just the one person I know that was using it was doing Netflix without hitting the cap and still able to do some online gaming. But at the time, he had a newborn, so the online gaming was cut down due to family. So I don't know if I could do it without hitting the cap, but I know Netflix at least is.
So my point I'm getting is you literally have two options, and most of the time they're both terrible for ISP. At least stateside. So
that
this is
two and, slightly separate.
Yeah. So and one of them is clearly not as good as the other for the same amount of money. And so this is the point: is that, you know, AT&T treats their customers like crap too. And I'm sure the other phone companies aren't much better.
Oh, I know AT&T treats you like crap, especially when it comes to their television service. People think this whole Dish AT&T combination is fairly new. No, they've been doing business together for years, and they've been fucking you over for years, especially on billing.
Well,
oh,
my point is, though, if you had a viable alternative to an ISP that's basically holding you hostage, you would take it. You would go for it. You wouldn't sit there and put up with it. So this is why we come back to this argument. And, you know, you'll see a lot of people, like especially the tech channels on YouTube, they talk about how there's no competition, so we need regulation. Well, the problem is there's no competition, so we need competition. Yeah, and
the reason there is no competition is regulation. Competition has been regulated out of the business. Just remove the regulations that prevent competition. Fix the problem. And it's a cheap way of fixing the problem. England did it.
I was just waiting to see who said they had more than three, and that was Madman, but it was barely. I mean,
yeah, that's not gonna really happen. Because generally, and this is even rare, and a lot of times the utilities that are branching into it, they start with business and then decide whether or not to go personal, and generally either go personal for a bit or completely stop. Like in our hometown,
yeah,
the utility there, they had
wireless
for
my
a bit,
used it.
And they stopped. I think they were actually bribed into stopping.
Might have been. They were terrible. Well, you know what? That's not true. Their service was good, and they really tried to make it work. Their technology was crap because they had these little wireless antennas they put on the side of people's houses. But, I mean, you got a bad, strong breeze, and you lose your internet connection. So, anyways, Nick, go ahead.
I was going to say, the downside on that one is they're being prevented from using technology that does work. There's a lot of places you just can't run another cable there if cable exists there.
So, all right, next article here is from Torrent Creek. Anti-piracy lawyer milked copyright holders for millions. Leaks from a confidential auditor report in the activities of bankrupt anti-piracy law firm John Schulter, S-C-H-L-U, that you has a... what are the two dots called? It's not an umlaut.
Umlaut.
That is an umlaut?
Pretty sure.
I thought an umlaut was the little hat. Well, whatever. It's accented. T-E-R. So, Schulter? Not sure how to say that. Suggests that the company defrauded its entertainment industry clients out of $25 million. One lawyer was singled out for most criticism after enriching both herself and her family members. So basically, not surprising anyone, a lawyer took advantage of all the MPAA settlement lawsuits that were going around, basically kept $25 million in payments, because we did the articles before where they figured out that basically the actual music industry wasn't making any money off the lawsuits, it was all the lawyers making money off of copyright lawsuits, and the music industry was going for it because they thought it was a deterrent for piracy. But... pretty much, this Joan Schulzer was hired for representing the MPAA and defrauded them out of a retarded amount of money. According to the thing here, failed to hand over around $25 million.
And she could have just billed for services and racked it up that much, depending on how they do.
They probably did. Remember, we did the article where they were doing that, where they were just paying ungodly amounts of money to these lawyers, and the return on it was basically nil.
A lot of times if you're pirating something, it's not because you like it.
Because you want to see what it is.
Well, I've got two movies, just DVDs that people have given me because the movies were crap. And I know I may be an exception. I go out of my way to buy certain movies, like all the DC animated crap. I say crap just as stuff, not as it's bad.
Yeah.
I've went out and bought all of those just so they will keep making them.
Well, you know, I use an Amazon box to stream a lot of my TV, and I've got an app on it that'll read from my NAS, so I could pirate everything I wanted and watch it on my TV just fine, and it does work. But yeah, I do the same thing for movies that I like, and you're right, the animated DC stuff is usually what it is. I will buy it on there. And, you know, partly it's just because, you know, it's a time thing. It's like, I'll pay $15, whatever. As opposed to having to go find it, hunt it down, download it, put it on the NAS, and then add it to the file list. But, I could totally pirate everything. Watch it on my TV just fine, using the same box. But at least I have the option right there just to go buy it if I'd rather just buy it, you know? Rent it. A lot of times I'll rent it. But.
And some of the other things that I stream, I don't watch Gotham on my television. It's because I'm at work when it's on. I have cable television. Every cable show I watch outside of news, I stream from my computer. Simply because it's not on when I'm wanting to watch it, and it's not all on their little Stream Live service thing. Was it DirecTV or whatever the hell they call it? TV Direct or some shit. And I'm paying for these channels, so it's not even like I'm pirating HBO. I'm pirating shit that I've already paid you to let me see, so don't gripe when I'm getting it off of a torrent or
BSP,
a stream.
Watching stuff?
Yeah.
Mostly Netflix, but again, that's a series or movie I like. Usually get a physical copy or...
Go buy the DVDs, okay.
Yeah, because again, like you said...
I'm no judging, dude. I'm just curious.
Oh yeah, Heroes? I bought the first season of Heroes so I could watch the last episode. I watched all the rest of them at a land war.
Sorry, what do you do, man?
I'm that way with comics. Like, I'll grab some comics, read them if I really like them.
Oh.
You know, then go out and buy trade paperbacks or sometimes single issues and stuff.
I don't think anybody can argue with for the sheer amount it would cost to go.
Yeah, to try everything.
Try comics.
Oh yeah, the library is good for that.
I'm gonna spend $200 to get all the back issues for this comic. That's,
you know, I think Marvel
not in press anymore.
I think both Marvel and DC have apps for tablets that let you read comics, but I think you still have to buy the
you have to buy it, and it's just as much as buying a physical copy, which pisses me off.
If they had something like a Netflix where you paid, like, you know, a flat $5 a month or something like that, and you
Marvel
had access to
that.
The library.
Yeah.
Marvel has that?
Marvel has that.
Like all the back issues and everything too?
Yeah. I want to say it's called like Marvel Ultimate or something like that. Yeah.
You may have just sold something for Marvel.
Dude, you need to get an affiliate code and read it out on the show here, because fuck. If it's got all the back issues, that's cool. I'm cool with paying a monthly fee for access to a library. I think that's fair.
Yeah,
as long as it's not a stupid fee.
Marvel Unlimited. $10 a month. I'm looking at it right now.
Wow.
That's not bad.
Oh.
Yeah.
Then you might know this. Does Chick Thor suck?
No. I actually really like her.
Okay, I might have to start making gay jokes about you. Thor's not a fucking title. It's a dude.
I don't know.
I can't completely criticize you yet because I haven't actually read it, and I would be intellectually dishonest to completely criticize you now. I will say the whole idea of turning Thor into a chick was stupid.
But that's just the thing. He isn't a chick. That's why I like it. That's why... I don't know. A lot of people were up in uproar. Thor's not a chick. You can't do that. Thor is not a chick. He's just become unworthy of Mjolnir, so he can't wield the hammer anymore.
But they're doing
the Thunderstruck thing, and someone else just picked it up.
Yeah, exactly. Kind of. See, and that's the other thing, is this has happened before. When that was announced, everyone's like, oh my god, Thor's a chick now. No, he's not a chick, and this has happened before with several other people. It's not that big of a deal.
Well,
and in my opinion,
but
it's been
they were
done
advertising
really well.
It like they were doing Thor as a gender bent character.
I don't know.
Part of where that came from. That, and of course, you have all the SJWs going nuts for it.
Yeah, I just think it was. People were commenting on it that didn't actually read the comics, so in my opinion, they had no room to talk.
Yeah. All right, next one up. This is from eattomorrow.com, which is just an amazing domain name. Tesla Motors has unveiled a battery that lets you power your home completely off the grid. Let's see, the battery unit itself contains the same batteries present in cars. 7-kilowatt unit will ship for $3,000, 10-kilowatt for $35,000, so you want to get the big one. They will store electricity from the grid or solar or wind on the site, and if the grid goes down, they will continue to power your home indefinitely. So basically, Tesla figured out that their batteries for their cars work in other things, and they're marketing them for homes.
I think this is fucking badass. I'm actually excited about it.
Well, because they say you can power it from whatever. So what the way I see it, you power it from the grid, right?
Yeah.
And then when your power goes out, you've got days of power or whatever. Of course, they're marketing it through. This is one of those greeny websites, so they're talking about how you can run it off of, you know, solar generator or whatever, which... Huh.
It's
guys,
a giant UPS in that case.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like, guys, I'm sorry, look at the kilowatt hours from solar or from wind. It just does not compare to traditional power method. If you want to talk clean energy, we'll talk nuclear. If you don't want to talk nuclear, well, then you don't want to talk real... it's badass. It's a good use of this technology.
I hate doing this because I feel like my testicles are going to shrink even uttering these words. But the biggest problem with wind and solar is that solar is being produced when most people aren't using energy at their home. So if you set up a solar panel farm or whatever on your roof or on your property, whatever the fuck, you're at work when it's making electricity. What it's doing is dumping power back into the grid that you're just getting a credit for whenever you're using coal when you finally come home to turn on your television and watch shit.
Well, if you're dumping it into one of these batteries, I mean, then it just stores it for you.
Yeah,
granted, you lose some, but...
If you dump it into the battery, that's going to solve a big problem of it's not available when you're actually using it.
Right.
So...
Well, wouldn't the power company be storing it?
No, it just gets used up in the
electricity
wires.
Does not work that way, sorry.
The big problem with coal-powered fire plants and even nuclear or everything on the grid is a big chunk of the power they produce is actually lost in transmission over the wires.
Right, it depends on how far.
You have to step it up. So if you go to your average transformer station, you know, they're running the power over those high-tension lines. It's like 50,000 volts or something going across those. And it's not, they're not doing that just for the badass of the numbers. They're doing it because you have to get the power to transmit over the distance. So those transformer stations are stepping it down to usable voltage.
Right.
So
a big chunk of that's being lost in heat and just in transmission. So these batteries able to store just use that you were going to be losing, dumping back into the grid anyway. I'm not going to say it would make solar or wind viable for home use, but it makes it much more viable. Because right now, when people say I have a zero house, what they're saying is I'm dumping enough electricity into the grid that I'm not being charged for the coal that I'm burning when I power my house.
Here's a thought. Here's a thought. So these things are, you know, essentially they're just giant DC batteries, right? So what if we take the concept of these batteries and mix it with the concept of the milkman? Just, you know, every week you have a service that comes out, grabs the battery out of your garage, installs the new one, and trucks it off so that you're not transmitting the power over the lines. I guess it's just a question of, are you losing more power over the lines, or would you burn it up in transporting the batteries?
Well, the main... Well, big are the batteries.
In the picture, they look like they're about the size of maybe a refrigerator.
Yeah.
$3,500 is kind of sucky as an initial investment, but it's not that terrible.
I don't think that's that terrible either. I mean, if I...
Yeah, it's doable.
I use more power than the average household, probably because of my rack, my server rack.
Sure.
So if I could offset, you know, with an investment like that and offset my power bill for several years, I think it would be worth it, probably.
And you know what I'm thinking, looking at this, is actually not even to do with alternative energy or anything like that. One of the nice side effects of a UPS for a computer is that the power coming out of it is usually much cleaner than the power coming out of the wall, because it's running off the battery, right? The battery kind of acts like
it's a capacitor.
It's conditioning it. So this would be conditioning the power for your house, which means your light bulbs would burn out less often, you'd have less appliance failures, and this is just due to power spikes, right?
Yeah, that's a good point.
You would have less maintenance on all of your electronic devices just over time, just from the you know, Your power is supposed to be at a solid 60 hertz, but it's not, because I'm wanting to say about 10 years ago they changed the regulation. It used to be that power was required to be 60 hertz solid, mainly because that's how clocks worked. They ran off the frequency of the grid. Well, the regulation was changed, and now it's a range. It's between 50 and it's like between 55 and 65 or something is acceptable. I know this because I have family that works in the power industry, which is also where I get the kilowatt argument from, kilowatt hour argument from, by the way. I've talked to people who fucking know, and they're like, yeah, all you got to do is go look at the kilowatt hour output, and it's just no con. It's just the alternative energy just isn't there. It just doesn't produce enough. If it ever does, I'll be the first to champion it. Don't get me wrong. If it's a viable, real thing, I know I knock it all the time on the show, but I knock it all the time because the technology isn't there yet. You know what I mean?
If somebody, is it?
I mean, I've done the stories where they talk about how they're getting the solar panels more efficient. I mean, I'm not saying it's not possible. I'm just saying it's not there yet.
They've come a long ways. Oh, yeah. Is it just the fact that, you know, they're becoming more efficient, they're making more power, but the sheer number of, say, solar power you would need to pull a coal plant is just...
A coal plant puts out several thousand kilowatt hours a day.
Yeah,
a solar
to
farm
equalize
puts
that,
out several hundred.
Yeah, so you would need to cover the size of Texas for one.
Yeah, you would need to clear cut my state pretty much to power one of our cities.
Well, does anybody know what the current conversion efficiency is for solar panel?
We did the story a couple of months ago how they had gotten that much more efficient. So I don't know what the current number is, but I know they had a new panel that they had invented that was much more efficient. And this is where you get the idea of the guy who, you know, I think it was last year we were talking about the guy who wanted to replace roads with solar panels that could be driven on.
The windows for your house that were solar panels. I liked that.
That's cool.
So, you know, I'm not saying it's impossible. I'm just saying right now,
it's just
a pure numbers game. It doesn't work. The only reason
I bet you look at a solar panel from now and one from, you know, the early 90s or when they were making, they're way more efficient. So it's just a matter of getting there.
Another thing that's kind of running against them, a lot of things that are helping the green energy become more efficient is also helping coal become more efficient. The big producer of green energy is just hydroelectrics and wind farms. Those are turbines. If you make the turbine more efficient, you're also making the coal-fired power plant more efficient.
Well, and the real problem against wind's got the same problem solar does, is the amount of space it takes up and the fact that it's not viable in all areas.
That's not constant.
Right. Now, some of the designs where they were talking about making this blimp that would, like, go up into the upper atmosphere where there was more constant wind, those kind of designs were cool. Because it's like, I could see that shit working.
I don't know, ocean designs, just offshore wind farms where no one wants because they're putting them off, like, the coast of Nantucket, and they're like, you're going to ruin our scenery. I'm like, well, you're the ones bitching about wanting wind. They can go there.
They're arguing in the chat room about what's green and what's not. I'm not even going there. I'm just talking pure numbers right now about source of power. Whether it's green or not, I'm not that worried about.
Who cares if it's green or not? Yes, it can be argued it's better, but we just want efficient power.
I'm cool with that. So, let's see. Wow, it's already an hour. All right, let's do this last story here, and then we'll move on to Dojo. This is just funny. This is from the HongKongFP.com. Let's see here. There is no internet censorship in China, says China's top censor. A senior Chinese official known as the gatekeeper of the country's internet has denied that the country censors online information. Liu Wei, chief of the State Internet Information Office, said China does not censor, but manages internet content in Xinjiang on Wednesday. Lou answered questions on a CNN reporter's question in a, or Lou was answering a CNN reporter's question in a press conference ahead of the second World Internet Conference to be held in Zhejiang's famous water town, Wuzhen, next week. If I'm saying these names wrong, I'm sorry. I'm kind of guessing at how you should say these. It is a misuse of words if you say content censorship. But no censorship does not mean there's no management. The Chinese government learned how to manage the internet from Western developed countries. We have not learned enough yet, Lu said, according to scripts published by the Xinhua news agency. Lu went on to say the Chinese government blocks some foreign websites because it has the right to choose friends.
If the government's blocking it, it's censorship. If you're blocking it, it's because you don't want to see white supremacists on the internet. I choose my friends. The government is attempting to manipulate what I think.
No, the government is just showing you what good friends are and not to talk to the other people.
Hey, they already have 12 years to brainwash you in school. Let me have my fucking internet.
Now the Chinese have your entire lifespan to brainwash you.
No, I don't want to live there.
That's why you don't live there.
Leave me out of your damn country.
Best answer to that. No, I don't want to live there. So, I got a couple of things here for Digital Dojo tonight. So, the first one is a cryptocurrency miner that I've been playing with here lately, and I actually really like. It's called eobot.com. The way this thing works is you rent gigahashes on a 5-year basis, and they're not that expensive. It's like 80 cents a gigahash or something like that. So I put, I think, $30 into it and transferred in a little bit of Bitcoin that I had mined earlier with a previous mining operation before the ASICs I had, was playing with were so outclassed it wasn't even worth running. And I've been just kind of goofing around at the interface. And so far, coin-wise, I'm not doing too bad. 1.5 Litecoins, like $8 worth of Bitcoin or something like that. And because I was goofing around, I have over 1,000 Dogecoin.
Hell yeah.
But the cool thing is it's you're basically renting gigahash space in somebody else's cluster, right? So you're not dealing with power, you're not dealing with running the thing all the time, you don't have to worry about managing a miner or anything like that. And it just kind of runs. It's got this little JavaScript on the page kind of guesstimating how much you're earning, which it's wildly inaccurate, so you occasionally refresh it and just see your currency just go way down. But it got me thinking, like, I've got a ridiculous amount of Dogecoin, mainly because I goofed up and left it mining Dogecoin for like a day, not really realizing I was mining, because I thought I'd left it on Litecoin.
Mm-hmm.
And nope, it was on Dogecoin, because they have an iPhone app, and all you have to do is tap the coin you want to mine, and Dogecoin's at the bottom of the screen for the default, so I must have accidentally hit it when I was exiting out. And yeah, I looked into trying to figure out how the hell I did that. I mean, I'm not that concerned. It's like, I have no intention. I know I'm not going to break even on this thing, right? At least not anytime soon.
Right.
But it's fun to play with. And hey, you get to mine some cryptocurrency without having to deal with the weird ass hardware or, run your graphics cards into the ground, right? So
I don't think anyone mines the graphics cards anymore anyways, it's all ASICs.
Yeah. So, but this got me thinking, especially having a ridiculous amount of Dogecoin. If I went on one of the exchanges and started buying Dogecoin at a hyperinflated price, like, 5 or 10 bucks per Dogecoin, would that not start the chain reaction and get more people buying it at a higher price and start bumping the value of it up?
And I don't know if you could do enough volume to get that started. You'd have to get several people in.
Well, right, but I mean, I'm thinking it wouldn't take that much because it's not like a lot of people are dealing in serious money in some of these cryptocurrencies. If you could, I mean, I know it's total market manipulation and probably unethical as all hell, but, if you go
in to the market.
Yeah, if you intentionally buy up one of these coins and you're paying a little bit more for it and you're just sitting on a ton of it, once you get Dogecoin up to $1 and dump it out, I mean,
Yeah.
Come out way ahead if you're sitting on a ton of it.
I don't know. It wouldn't surprise me if that's what's happening to a lot of these cryptocurrencies. Like, why did Bitcoin shoot up just a couple months ago and now it's back? I haven't looked in a while. Is it back down to like 300?
It's been climbing. It was at 419 earlier. Right now it's rated at 424. I'm looking at page.
It hasn't gone down then.
It's still sitting at a decent amount. So
yeah.
Litecoin's been pretty steady too at about $3 a coin.
That still hurts so much because when I started
mining, it was like $10 or $15 a coin.
No, Litecoin was 27.
Oh yeah. So, I forgot to post the link to EOBot, but I find the service interesting. I wouldn't get into this expecting to break even on it, more than break even. So you're not going to get rich unless you wake up one morning and I've managed to manipulate Dogecoin into being worth something. Which I
please
think
do.
Would be a fun trick. You know what I mean?
Because I have a lot of it.
You have a lot of it too? I mean, it'd be funny as hell to wake up and find Dogecoin worth $1 just because you'd have the number of internet people going, oh my god, I've got thousands of dollars all of a sudden. And of course, it would immediately drop the moment you tried to, get out of it.
What you're doing actually happens quite a bit in smaller currencies like the Icelandish currency. They've suffered a lot of different currency manipulations for people making profit just doing exchanges.
Yeah.
That's one reason they were looking into switching over to either the Canadian currency or the U.S. dollar. And George Soros has made billions manipulating, millions manipulating South American currencies. So the model's already out there. You just need to get enough backing to do it. Generally, you have to have quite a bit of capital to dissuade any type of market like that.
I don't know. Some of these things are accidentally copied. Psychrosis post and posted it back into the chat box. Putty, you click something, it copies it, and then, I thought I still had my link for the next Digital Dojo entry here. Sorry, everybody in the chat room there. Anyways, so I don't know. It's interesting. I don't know that you're really going to pull off market manipulation any more than other. You get enough people doing it, right? But
you just have to make sure you're not the biggest idiot.
Yeah, but I find this EOBot service interesting because it's fairly harmless way to get into mining. And whereas, at least how I've been playing with it lately, especially here with some of the 24-hour rentals of SHA hashing, or not SHA, but Scrypt, we're doing Litecoin and Dogecoin mining.
Mm-hmm.
Like copying Bitcoins into Scrypt mining and then mining Litecoin, the total amount of cryptocurrency I have in my account hasn't gone down after the 24-hour period of playing around with your miner. So I've been basically using the mining to turn Bitcoin into Litecoin, and I can probably do the reverse of turning Litecoin into Bitcoin by buying more SHA-256 hashing. Because you can do these 24-hour rentals as well, and you can buy the cloud time in cryptocurrency. So if you already have some, you can transfer it in and buy it in that way as opposed to doing an exchange, because if you buy it with money, they put a 3-month wait before you can pull anything out of it, out of your account. Something like that. 2 months, 3 months, something like that. But I started with my PayPal account because I wasn't even trying to hide what I'm doing. I'm just researching it and playing around with the cryptocurrencies, right? Yeah. And it can mine a bunch of different ones. So if I wanted to get one to play with, it'd be the easiest way to do it. It would just be to click on, I don't know, what's this one? Peercoin. And let it run for a day.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'd have Peercoin to play with, right? Or Namecoin, or Blackcoin, or Redditcoin, or Dash.
Yep.
Wait.
Dash How many coin. Megahash do you have?
Gigahash? 50?
Gigahash?
Right now? On this cloud 50 miner?
50 gigahash?
Yeah. I'll put $30 into it.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, that's a lot.
Like I said, I much prefer this over trying to build out your own miner.
Script.
Well, no, that's not script. That's in SHA-256.
That was one of the
buying
things...
With Bitcoin to mine Litecoin, play with it.
Okay,
it's because I hadn't noticed that Bitcoin was steadily rising. I would have been better off leaving my money in Bitcoin, but I didn't notice what was going on. like, oh, wait, there's a trend there, and I just wasn't paying attention. Fuck.
That was half the appeal, though, when I first started doing this, was building my own rig and, you know, doing the graphics cards and mining like that. But that phase has passed. Everything's...
Oh, sure. I built a little Raspberry Pi with the four ASIC miners on it and ran that for a bit. And I got... By the time I was done, I think I had spent $100 in my miner and made about, you know, $30 worth of Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. That dug up my old Bitcoin wallet because I'd forgotten about it and transferred that into EOBOT. And that's what I was using to play around with some of the EOBOT options.
No, cool.
But, yeah, I like it as far as a mining operation goes. It's worth playing with. You know, if you're just wanting to play with the cryptocurrencies, don't get into it thinking you're going to make money, because odds are you're not.
Right. Well, and it'd be interesting, like I said, to see if you can actually get the coin that you mined out of it.
Oh, I'm sure you can. Just, when I go to withdrawal right now, it'll actually tell me. If I go to withdrawal, it'll say it's disabled and such because I deposited. Oh, because I did a PayPal purchase to get started. It's yeah, if you just do a direct crypto deposit, I don't think it puts that weight on there. So I've got to wait till looks like May.
Dang.
So that's fine.
That's
doesn't bother me.
Long freaking time though. Huh.
Well,
I
yeah,
know you have to trust those people too, because your coin is sitting on their wallet right now, and in May are they going to be around for you to pay out and all that? There's a lot
they've
of
got a history,
trust
though.
Issues.
They've been around for a while. So I'm not.
So at Mt. Gox.
But I also, when I first started putting money into it, I also knew that there's a possibility I'm just going to be right out.
Right.
So I didn't get into it thinking I had, you know, yeah, that's a good point. Psychrosis said Mt. Gox had been around for a while before it just happened.
That's
disappeared.
What I was saying.
Well, anything named after a magic. Like,
Magic the Gathering Exchange, yeah.
No, don't do currency with that.
So, all right, next door here is from Fried. And Fried has this section they call Ninja Privacy Tips and 150 Tools. And they have a fairly decent you know, explanation of encryption, cryptocurrency, how to anonymously use the internet, or that kind of stuff. What search engines are good to use if you're worried about your privacy. And then if you keep scrolling down on the page, they've got a good list of some tools to use. I2P, Freenet, ORBot, Tor, GNUnet, some encryption tools, Crypt Setup, TrueCrypt, Descryptor. So the article might be a bit old. They're still referencing TrueCrypt. Namecoin for distributed DNS, DNS Crypt, some free tools for email, email alternatives like RetroShare, which we've played with before, BitMessage. So, you know, it's just a good article to look at if you're wanting to bone up on some of this stuff. I've kind of skimmed it. I won't say that I've sat there and dug through every bit of it to confirm it, but most of it looked good enough that I feel comfortable throwing the link out on the show. So... And if EOBOT shuts down and I lose all my cryptocurrency, that will suck, but that'll be the end of it because it's, you know, it's not going to have a lot of money in it. No way it's going to make more than the $30 I put into it to start with by the end of it, right?
Right.
So. Anyways, though, that's all I got. I'm told that the Newsreel show has been plugging us, so we should plug them, newsreel.ca. They actually interviewed Kennedy a couple weeks ago, which was interesting. And
yeah, I haven't listened to that one yet. I was going to the list.
I've skimmed a couple of their shows, clicked through them, listened to about half the one with Sean on it, just out of idle curiosity. Really, I haven't had time to go back and really give it a good deep dive. But their audio quality seemed decent. I think I heard a couple of clicks and pops there, but I think that's probably just because they're using blanking on the name, open source TeamSpeak alternative. Mumble. They're using
Mumble. Right.
And we gave up on Mumble. We tried to make it work. We really did. We also hacked it into a Second Life client, if I remember.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
Yeah.
I think what I was hearing when I was listening to the drops were more mumble than anything they were wrong. So, anyways, they were. I'm told they were plugging us, so we're plugging them. Even though I'm not really quite certain what the opinions of the other radio station are. I thought they weren't very pleased with us last time I talked, heard anything about it. So, we're just gonna leave it at that. I'm gonna keep it civil on the show. We can. Bad talk him when we get off the show, right?
new host,
I don't think he's supposed to say that while still on air.
Oh, we're still on the air? Fuck.
No.
That's all I got. Anybody have anything to throw out before we close out the show?
We're talking about cryptocurrency, I don't think mining it's ever going to be particularly useful or viable as far as making money long term. But I do think the technology is pretty cool. I would like to see it distributed among, like, all banks and then some private individuals that just want it just to kind of base our currency on and just switch over to it so that no one banking institution, like the Federal Reserve, can cause $1 trillion to appear every month or
yeah, I mean, with blockchain technology, it is really difficult to forge transactions or, create unfair amounts of currency. I mean, it's harder to manipulate. It's almost like going back to a gold standard because there's a finite resource. I mean, there's not a real finite resource, but I mean, you can check what they're doing and see if they're cheating. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and that's the big reason I'm even interested in it as all is I think that would be great to move a country's or even a world's currency to.
That'd be hard to pull off.
The world would be hard because each country loves currency manipulation.
Well, yeah, that's how they stay out of debt.
But it's not only how they stay out of debt, it's how they bribe voters. It's, we're going to say we're not taxing you because pumping out new money, it takes a while for inflation to hit, and then most people don't know what inflation is, and they'll just blame whatever store for the prices of food going up, rather than knowing it's not that the price of food went up, it's that your dollar isn't worth a dollar anymore. It's worth 75 cents. So you're really spending the same amount of money on that food, you just have less money.
Yeah.
Because your employer's not raising what they're paying you an hour, and the government just dumped how much ever cash in the system that they've, or in our system, the Federal Reserve, which is only.
So is that a yay or a nay on our plan to manipulate Dogecoin into being worth something?
What you're doing, it's more commodity speculation than currency speculation, because no one spends those coins to actually buy things. So what you're talking about is more of a trading places thing rather than actual currency manipulation. You're trying to corner orange futures. And again, a really good comedy that actually explains economics accurately.
Nicely done, sir. All right. Sorry, do you got anything, BSV?
Nope. That's it.
My mason jar has been out of wine for a little while now, so I think it's time to close things out.
Reload. Reload. Reload.
Truth bomb alert.
Na 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 na. Sarge.